welcome all the members who are present here, members of the committee, and welcome the members who belong to the Southampton Council, and welcome the officials from the Department of International Relations, led by Ambassador Selma
Jastri.
Yes. Ambassador Joini and all other officials from the department and the officials from the committee. Most welcome. I would assume this is going to be a fireworks meeting, given the number of topics that to have. And I must indicate that members of this committee across the political spectrum would always be excited to receive a briefing from fellow South Africans, men and women like yourselves, because the work we are doing on international affairs cannot always, let me just say always, cannot always be read from a textbook. Things emerge every week. There are elections in certain countries with a lot of policy implications, trade implications, etc., etc. So, if you are in a committee like this, a briefing such as the one that you're going to present becomes important to inform the quality of our debate and the quality of the questions we put to the department and to the president and to the deputy president. And sometimes discussions we have in our various caucuses, the DA caucus, the EFF caucus, the ANC caucus, etc., etc. I am also, I don't know whether it happens to the other members, but me as a chair, sometimes members here just say, hey, you must tell us what has happened in this room, what does it mean? The elections in the suit, things like that, not just here, elsewhere. They think you've picked up this matter, and they would not, sometimes at least the details or the implications or the analysis. Those are things we don't have. So to find that we are in one meeting and people like you are assembled there is always exciting. I thought I must explain that context. Now, can we receive apologies on both sides? What was the start? Yeah, on both sides. Let's start with our side.
Apologies. Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have three apologies. One from Honorable Khadiri. He is not coming in due to not feeling well. And Honorable Ekman and Honorable Khalaba, they are running late, Chair.
If they are late, it means they are not running.
That's five.
So, it's three, right? How can you?
Morning, everyone. My apologies. I live at 40 hours due to open. I think it's like this.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Any other apology? From our side, I have a meeting at 2 o'clock, and then I have a meeting of the PGIR after that. I think it's 3 o'clock.
1 o'clock and or 1:30 and 2 o'clock we could have our lunch. If we could agree to have our lunch at either 1:30 or 1:20 up to 2 o'clock, then it would be done. So those are going to give us briefings. Just time your presentations within that time limit. Honorable Rakuti.
I also have a 1 o'clock meeting, Chairperson, so I would have to leave by 1:45.
Okay. I speak on behalf of this main network and on my behalf. At 1 o'clock we have another committee.
So
let's
then
let's aim to finish
by 1 o'clock, let's be done. Honorable Kaupe.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I have a meeting now with 10 Chief of Forum. It's a special one. I thought the council is good. Now it's just like a special one. I'm sure it's about good setting.
Now you have all spoken.
Please.
I thought I was going to introduce you. From the team, from the Sakwaya. Any apologies, what's recording?
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the esteemed portfolio committee and all attending. From my side, we've got apologies from the Chairperson of the Council, Professor Schumann, Mr. Schumann, Professor Anton Kalmutia, and we also have apologies from Mr. Dennis Roger. I do think including Professor Piquet. As we're coming, we're still receiving apologies. Given that some are late, but they promised to try to call them when they come. But those are their quality.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ambassador Joy.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. Apologies from the Director General, and I'm here presenting the Director General, but also here as the DDG responsible for the Secretary that supports the choir. And I am with the team of the Secretary that's here with me.
Thank you very much. The agenda today is a comprehensive engagement with the South African Council on International Relations on a wide range of issues. And these issues, amongst others, are a brief summary of the Sakwaya seminar on South Africa's strategic role on the continent, which will be held from 12 up to 14 July. Secondly, is a brief summary of the proposed Sakwaya workshop on global governance. Thirdly, it's a brief discussion on Palestine and Israel. Fourthly, it's a brief discussion on the Pan-African Parliament. Lastly, it's some key elements relating to the Trump administration and the repercussions for South Africa and Africa, such as climate change, the American protectionist policy, the ban on Muslim travelers to the USA, and the increasing threat of terrorism. Now, they also indicated that they would be happy that the Sakwaya team would be happy to hear if members would like to be briefed on any other topic. And from my side,
clarified, perhaps not in detail, perhaps not in detail, the latest elections in Netherlands. I'm saying that in the context of the fact that it's been a long time since the latest the elections in Netherlands, the elections in France. What has happened a few days ago is already into that year, the U.S. In fact, it's no longer the U.S. Cuba policy. It's actually Trump's Cuba policy. So it's a very specific just some small details. I am not sure if one of you could spend a minute or two on how we are reading the world order, the balance of forces internationally, whether we think one journalist has said a second Cold War, whether in terms of the international balance of forces, the international political climate, with narrow nationalism emerging as it does, the shrinking economy, the attitude that the USA has, and the attitude that President Putin has.
Point of order, Mr. Chairperson, on a point of order, are you proposing additional agenda items?
Yeah.
So we have not adopted the agenda yet. May I ask that we follow procedure?
I'm coming back to that. I was saying that the members have said that we should include items that we think we can agree on. I was saying from the chair, here are the issues. What, of course, was better from the chair was the elaboration on the discussion. Because they must be able to prepare right now when they are. You can't ask this question at the end. So I will, and I am now inviting the other topics that members was on. And the end of the. Honourable Member Rapport was asked. For that, welcome, Honourable Bergman and Honourable Mukhalafa.
Thank you, Chair.
And I don't want to cause a brutal stress among yourself. Mukhalafa may feel that I should have started with you.
You're a teacher, you start alphabetically.
Chair, you start with the driver.
It just reminds me, you know, I used to work at the Patco bus company in 1979. Now, one driver was late one day. I said to the manager, sorry, I'm late, but my wife didn't wake me up. Then he said, who must wake you up? I have to wake you up. Welcome. Any additional topics? Mukhalafa and Bergman. What we have just indicated that the topics they are briefing us on. And then they wanted any additional matter. But if it is not arising now, it can arise during the engagement.
Yeah.
I want to hand over to your good selves without wasting further time for a presentation.
Mr. Chairperson, I am waiting for the agenda to be adopted because I have some proposals on the agenda.
That's a good reminder.
Can I hear members on the adoption of the agenda with the addition that was made? Ararukalia?
Yes, I would like to have feedback on next week's program and also on the study tour.
Okay. Next week's program. Being a youth month, I'm requested to lead quite esteemed members of the council as a young person in the council. I am relative to the council members.
I'm Jerry speaking it on that side and not to us.
Thanks very much again. That being said, Chair, I think your preamble does, in fact, prepare us well to can make the inputs that we wanted to engage the portfolio committee on. I think it is no secret that we live in a world that is rapidly changing, having understood the geopolitics and the current economic uncertainties that we find ourselves in this world. They have led us to begin to question, and I think the question you've raised, what is South Africa's position in the world, given these particular realities? And having said that, it is by no surprise that what we wanted to put forward to the portfolio committee as an extension of our last meeting was that because... Okay. Maybe let me start by doing that. I'm reminded to introduce members. I was with them, we had breakfast, so naturally you feel that. Maybe let me allow that change for purposes of procedure. I am Tepo Mashiane, a member of the council, and I'm requested to lead the delegation today. Let me allow members to introduce themselves.
Good morning, members. I'm
My name is Joel Singwana, a member of the council representing civil society.
Good morning. My name is Shamil Jeffy. I'm normally at the University of Cape Town as a
specialist in North Africa and the Middle East, and I'm here from university. We are about four academics serving on the council.
My name is Professor Mpaka, and I come from the University of
Oxford. I'm
from academia.
From Martin.
Hello, support you while I'm quite
fine. Okay, well, thanks very much. Thanks for the reminder. So as we're saying that we really honor this opportunity, and we hope that it will be a culture that we begin to embrace, that we, as and when there are issues that require engagement around, we're able to be called upon. And again, like you had said in your preamble, we continuously deal with these issues as and when they emerge and changes the posture of the world that we live in. And that's why today, Chair, we wanted to zoom into some of the activities. As I said, as an extension of us introducing the council in our last engagement, that we also take into confidence insofar as the activities that we are planning, that we believe requires a concerted effort in assisting our nation to understand these issues we are dealing with, which we are saying are complex. So we thought it is important that we come to the portfolio committee and lay bare some of the issues that we are grappling with. And as a result, I will be requesting Professor Shamil to speak on the planned seminar, which is basically, Chair, in part response to some of the questions you raised, is more going to be a response on examining and assessing South Africa's current place, role, and understanding in Africa. The seminar will also determine South Africa's will and capacity to lead Africa's renewal in government and development and security. But also, we as a council have thought that we need to also provide appropriate recommendations and steps to decision makers in government and the non-state sector on how to coordinate and collectively work to ensure that we place South Africa in the equal space or in equal level of geopolitics and contestation, economically, socially, and otherwise. So as a result, as the program has been outlined, maybe let me allow Professor JB to just take us through on some of the issues and the thinking behind the council's move in this direction as the first program. And I think after that, just to outline process, we can engage with the program and then allow the next item. Prof, maybe you can. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that introduction. So what we've done at the SACWIRE is we've divided ourselves up into separate working groups, multi-nationalism. Seppo, do you remember all the working groups? In any case, I'm part of a working group called Africa's World, which is a rather awkward title, but it seeks to flag the issues of Africa in the world and Africa. Each of the working groups are meant to be developing seminars and programs of activity to really highlight the issues that are important in their area. We starting off with a seminar on the 12th and 13th of July. Now the working group has has been meeting separately and online and so on, but this is the first major event, and it is an attempt to be intensive about the many aspects that face Africa. So you have copies of the program, I believe, and you can ask questions. I'm part of the planning group for the conference. And so I won't go through it section by section necessarily, but we have a couple of heavy hitters from the US who will be speaking on US policy and its evolution towards Africa, from the from Russia, from the EU or on the EU, and some members of DERCO. But we will be pairing these up with the leading academics around to
Let's put them on silent.
So what we do have here is a mixture of people, some heavy hitters internationally, and some administrators who are focusing particularly on South African policy, but also academics to have a conversation and a dialogue. Please look at this program. If you have any questions, you can ask me. The other thing is, we'd like to extend an invitation to you to come and participate and be present. This program is already excessively full, so I don't think I can suggest anybody to come on the program, but if there's an urgent request, we can do something. At the moment, it's already 10 to 15 minutes of presentations. The important thing is people will be there for 2 days. People whose business is only think about West Africa, Professor Adebayo, for instance, or East Africa, or the Great Lakes regions, and so on. So I think I personally am out of the country, and I'm terribly envious of the feast, and it will really be an update. Our initial thinking was to have a Southern Africa focus, but then we said, let's keep the Southern African focus second. So we're going to have a second seminar, which will be Southern Africa only. So start with a bigger continent picture, and then we are still to determine the date for the Southern Africa event. I think South Africa is chairing, or is already chairing, or will be chairing, the SABCC. So it's important that we be on the cutting edge of information and knowledge on the region. But this is going to be a signature event for the continent. We have four or five academics with fantastic contacts continentally, and I can see this as a great event. So please ask me questions. But a Southern Africa focus will be the follow-up. So any questions? So you see it moves through global trends, African governance, growth, leadership, and then the second day will be regionally focused. Southern Africa, West Africa, East Africa, North Africa, Central Africa. So it's thematic and then regional. If you can't make it to both, then you know the regional areas that your interest could be become. I don't know if you may know some of these people, or if you don't know them, you can ask anything. Is there any item you feel should be on the agenda? We've neglected.
Thank you very much, Chair. Prof, just on, I know that you're not drilling down into the specifics, but I believe it's a work in progress, especially the regional session. The main focus of the regional sessions, do we have specific themes for those regional sessions, or will it be just across the board? Like if you say in SADC you want to focus on democracy or governance or trade, or if you want to then focus on hotspots, like the current hotspots in SADC is Zambia, of course. So are you making it open, or is it like thematic?
No. Thank you very much for that. We will definitely focus on the hospitals.
No, 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 no problem. I'm going to invite comments from everyone at the same time. On our career, is there anything you want them to know? Okay? Remember? From my side, the topics that will be covered by the seminar are very good, but I note that with regard to development, particularly economic development and the intra-African trade, which is very important, I would have loved that the seminar does discuss the current weaknesses and challenges on the one hand of how far each of the regions of the African continent, the EAC, SADC, ECOWAS and others. And I think their success stories are actually varied. How far they've come towards their tripartite free trade area. That is on the one hand. And that should include the envisioned continental free trade area. And then on the other, they may not gravitate smoothly towards this vision if intra-African trade is as low as it is. And if there's any lesson to be learned, it is the European Union. And recently I picked it up that in fact France and Germany played a very key strategic role in the evolution of the European Union in various sectors. Now, there are things, physical impediments to the African Union that are there. Hard roads, or the quality of graveled roads, connectivity, the dams, the railroads, the air transport, which is still the colonial air transport, and others. Now, the trade in the European Eurozone is more among themselves because it is, there are these kind of enablers. And we have this kind of disabler among ourselves. It's a big challenge. And I heard that, I had somebody from the TTI, that business people will say, but if you say we must go and do certain things in this country, I must first fly to France and come back. Come back here, and then I can't get next door when I'm in that country. The roads are bad. There's no air transport. There's also a security challenge. All of those things. I'm just saying, it could be good that if we were to look at the African continent, this gets also discussed. Now, regarding the invitation to the committee. We request a written letter. Can you advise, directed to the speaker, and then you send a copy to us. Because what we normally do, when members request to go there, then we send this to the chair of committee, Honorable Frolic, so that they can pay for their account transport, for their everything else. And they will come from different entry points, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, etc. And then we will distribute it to the members so that Parliament knows. And we have a committee to start.
Yes, Chairperson. And then also for members to note it will be during the constituency period. So up
October, which will also meet the chief whip. But we'll handle that just outside the meeting.
Okay. Anything else, Professor Paul?
Can I just come back to
now?
And also, Chair, you have the request for other input into the program. If Sapphire can allow maybe the committee to come back to them with some suggestions, not necessarily now in this committee.
Yeah. Thank you. Over to you, Prof. Thank you very much for really valuable input, and I think we will convey that to my colleagues. And if there is any other input from the committee, please do communicate it to us. We will see where we can bring it in. So that's precisely the kind of input that we want. And we will have a lot of expertise there. People who've been doing the empirical evidence-based work to precisely tell us levels of connectivity, levels of infrastructure, successes and the weaknesses and so on. With regard to the areas, by the way, we start on the 12th of July, but the substantial meet of the event, the actual seminars, the 13th and the 14th. I think each regional area will have their particular areas of focus, given the contemporary issues. You see under West Africa, we already have a issue there on terrorism, but that won't be the only issue, but that is certainly, we have identified that as an issue that we need to focus on. On Southern Africa, Zambia will be there, but we have identified Zimbabwe as an issue. But on North Africa, Libya is the issue. But it won't be limited to this, but we've certainly identified in our discussion some of the key issues per region. But on the thematic issues, what the chair has raised is precisely where we want to go, because it is forward-looking based on knowledge where we're at, and we'll communicate that to the planning committee. So we will, our secretariat will deal with the invitation letter to the speaker. Thank you very much. The next one, because are we done on this one? Am I correct?
Check if there are no other questions, I think we can pass on this one.
I have a comment on this one, and it doesn't have to be answered now. You see, there is, I'm not sure if I should use the right word, that there is a continuous tension between North Africa and Nigeria. Perhaps it's over leadership. And this tension is not helpful to the African continent, in that you do need a good rapport between these big states of the African continent, such as Nigeria and South Africa, at a leadership level. And it's not about personalities. Even if you change presidents, but they need each other so that they can then lead the African continent on the issue of development, on the economy, on security, etc. Because if none of them, if you have to make an intervention elsewhere, and South Africa says not yet, or Nigeria says not yet, it will divide the continent and people will take sides, and then they'll get exploited by other countries. Now, amongst others, claim that the standing of either Nigeria or South Africa is not helped by this kind of tension. And funding, and the funding of the African Union. Because if the two were to take responsibility for funding, it will actually leverage their position. When they say, let's take this direction. Now, once just one example, when after President spoken about the Pakistanis and then Nepal, then he has had to speak to influential presidents in Africa, while the Bouteflika was, and Obasanjo, and the three of them then spoke to regional leaders, and they carried the day towards bringing Nepal. including migrating from the OAU into the AUA with specific focus that look, the OAU has achieved this. Now the AU must achieve this. You couldn't do it alone. So if we're talking about the standing of South Africa, it also depends on how certain regions are viewing South Africa. Da, 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 da. Sometimes with suspicion. The weakness that South Africans think like non-African. Black and white for that matter. It could be that they are victims of the history we're studying, you see. Now, you know, I don't want to put any law on this subject. But the Minister of Basic Education, Jimotsakh, was actually saying, speak on this matter, that much of the African continent, they look at our hairstyles, our dress sense, our attitude. They say we behave like whites. Not referring to the white people, to the black people. The attitude here towards them. Now, whether this is a matter, now, and yet when you travel in the world, they expect South Africa to, they ask you, why don't you do something in this world? Why don't you do as if these are our tense problems? But with tensions like this, if there's any country that has got a particular view about us, at least because I work with them in Zimbabwe, it's only that they have got a problem of economic strength. But at political level, they actually feel that they want to tell us where to get off because we don't think like now, sorry to bring that. I was just saying, when we discuss, these are things to look at.
Sure.
Yeah. Can I?
You're all over the map.
Yes, just one very brief. This is precisely the discussion we had in our working group, that we cannot take our position in the continent for granted. It's been shifting, events shift, and we need to take the trend into consideration and how we can critically evaluate changing perceptions of South Africa. So, in fact, many of the speakers are academics in South Africa, but not all from South Africa. And we rely on critical, frank input on perceptions of South Africa so that we don't take our position for granted, which we had in the 90s, but see how we should fix our policies to remain relevant and really deeply, intensively part of the context.
Thanks, Prof.
Chacha, I think the issues that you are raising, they have been noted, and I think council members are noting some of these issues. I think for me, they begin to also talk to how do we make the program also look at possibilities of making input in that regard, because what comes out of this engagement will therefore also influence how we make the program to have a fraction of the issues that are raised here. As I said, the reason we're here is that we're moving to a next step of implementation, and for the council to be seen to be inclusive in nature, so that our advisory role is not limited to sectors that are in the council, but it's inclusive. And hence why I do think that we are also in a way responding to the next item on the program. We are also deliberately looking at having a discussion or for a lack of a better way, to have an outreach program that would be annual, targeting young people to discuss the very same issues that we're grappling with on international relations. But at the center of it, to discuss South Africa's foreign policy as an instrument to engaging in the global or world geopolitics. So, we therefore, as part of the council, thought that the youth sector becomes quite critical to engage. And speaking to the next issue where I'm making a presentation, I also sit as the convener of the Working Group on Global Governance. And in our interaction as a working group, we have thought that deliberately we identify sectors of interest. We have already implemented a few programs with the University of Pretoria, engaging with students in the field of international relations or political sciences. And we have supported an association called UNASA, UNASA, which is an association of students who model the UN, but over and above also engages on research on what UN does. We are also in discussions with young people who are part of the Association of the African Union Student Chapters. And we're saying these activities allow us to understand and to gain confidence of a future that we envisage of South Africans who understand their position in the world. However, we thought because we've already done some work around that, we want to go beyond and target young people who might not be in organized structures and institutions like universities, but who are part of non-governmental societies, young people within churches, and engage them on these fundamentals, and be able to come up with a more of a concrete advisory position to the portfolio committee, minister, and so forth. But what is the more important chair for us is that for the first time we'll be able to have publications that have got a general voice of South Africans around issues on international relations. And of course these discussions and platforms are meant to start debate, start engagement, start discussion. And at the end of the day have a position on what is the role of And I thought we should be able to indicate that we are planning to have this discussion with young people who will be drawn from different sectors of society by September latest. The preparations also are underway, and we thought that as a way of also briefing the portfolio committee to get views, still at the conceptual level, to get views on how we can do this and do it right collectively, such that at the end of the day, it's not seen to be a council document, but it is seen to be a document that can be embraced by South Africans in general. So that was speaking to the second item. I'm not sure if members would want to contribute to this item, but also allow the portfolio committee to interact with the conceptual. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mashiani. Prof. Ambassador.
Thank you, sir.
You want to add on this?
Thank you very much, sir. Before I add to what our leader has said, let me go back to the topic that you raised, particularly on tensions within the African continent that impede progress towards African unity. I think that is a very, very important aspect of our discussion if we want to create a framework that is going to be solid for moving forward with what we envisage in the workshop. But I also want to maybe add one point which I consider very, very significant. The internal and external instance and the balance thereof. Because we may assume that tensions between Nigeria and South Africa are caused by Nigerians and South Africans, only to realize that when you further unpack this, there are other forces outside who may not wish South Africa and Nigeria to work together. which means therefore in efforts to try and create a framework for, I would say, constructive engagement between the two countries, we must have done a full analysis and evaluation of the external aspect before we come to ourselves and say, what is wrong with us? Why can't we talk with each other? Why can't we work as a team? But also, regionally, there's West Africa, there's Southern Africa. West Africa is a composition of countries that are come from French background, then English, Anglophone background. Then that also is another issue that maybe we need to look at closely, which the Nigerians can maybe work on. And then I just thought I should mention this, so that as we move on with this issue raised, the problem is a bit, so that we don't leave out aspects that may take us back to where we were. Insofar as the issue of youth, as I would say referred to by my brother here, I think this is critical, because we are talking about the future when we talk about the youth, which means therefore I think we should put more effort in trying to organize the South African youth into being part of this process. I know that there are planned outreach programs to various parts of the country, provincially and otherwise, but I think we need also your support on this one, so that we can work together and see to it that this works. Thank you.
Our members, can I hear you, Honorable Majila?
No, thanks, Chair. Thanks very much. The input by the ambassador, especially on the issue of French speaking and English speaking countries, reminded me of the situation of Cameroon, where you have a French speaking Cameroon, which is dominant, and an English speaking Cameroon, of which those people seem to be saying the government of Cameroon is actually not taking care of them, and there's a likelihood of a turmoil ensuing. So I wanted to check if the discussion on West Africa will also touch on that particular aspect. With regard to the youth, I mean, there's a discussion that says Africa has a youth parity. And obviously, if the population is so youthful, unlike in Europe, where the population is aging, we need to really focus on programs targeting the youth as future leaders of Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maila. Honorable Akuti.
Yeah. I'm just going to be transparent. I'm doing a study about international relations. How does it affect to the youth? And really, youth, especially from the rural and township areas, it is little known. So we are feeling that this happens. we are pleading some call if we can really ensure that it is impacting the young ones. I don't think that the youth are the future leaders. They are the present leaders. So I'm really excited and we really want to see a lot of impact being done to the rural youth, to the township. I'm from a township. So I really want to see a lot of that kind of making our what I can say, a child from coping back. Knowing, not impacting, speaking to the child in China. Taking Kofi Mbaba to China. And China to Kofi Mbaba. Chairperson, I think that if ever, we are not going to do that. I don't know where do you come from. I know you are from Bumaland. But I don't know which angle are you coming from. So let's make sure that our youth, even if we can have that kind of, they can talk to them. So I'm really throwing it there. I'm not a sangoma. I'm saying that to all of us who are seated here, let's impact our youth. We cannot say that we are Department of International Relations and Cooperation, but our youth are not really understanding what actually what is happening. So it should come from us. Let's revolutionize how we impact our present youth about the international relations. So I'm saying, if I was in the ANC meeting, I was going to say I'm mandatory. But I'm not there. So Chairperson, it's needed. We won't be able to have this kind of fighting because we are saying that with our Ubuntu diplomacy, that is the most important kind of our foreign policy. But with our Ubuntu policy, I am because we are. And what are we doing with our security, safety, with our peace kind of diplomacy? It should start in the street level. It should start in the street level. So, young lion, we've got so much to do. And so thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Rakuti. Honorable Mukhalapa.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think, firstly, I just want to get clarity on the issue that the ambassador is raising in terms of our relations with Nigeria. He speaks of external assessment. And I would presume that the good professors are here. They know that if you do assessment and evaluation, you start internally. You don't go externally without yourself doing an internal assessment. So you cannot go look for solutions or for problems elsewhere before you look what's the problem of yourself. So I think in that external assessment of external forces, we need to do an internal assessment of what is this that is between us and Nigeria before we talk of external forces. And that is always a de facto position in Africa, that when things wrong, we think people elsewhere rather than ourselves first. So I think that is a food for thought that we need to look at, that don't look far much external rather than first looking internal of what is the problem between us and Nigeria and what are those internal issues that we are faced with that makes a problem between us and Nigeria promoting the relations. Secondly, I think the issue of the global government and the involvement of the youth is definitely a welcome move, and I think it should be supported because of always foreign policy space is seen as elitist and far removed from the domestic imperative. And definitely, what we would like to see is the impact of foreign policy to the young people. Because often our foreign policy stance and our foreign policy perspective do do not necessarily make sense to the youth, and they are impacted by those decisions. So we would like to see a synergy between the involvement of young people into foreign policy space, not only in making sure that we clarify the so-called national interest, and as well as, you know, our foreign policy trajectory, but also in ensuring that domestically, if we say we've got a relationship with China, how does it impact the young person from Kumbaba, as my previous colleague was saying? So do we narrow that foreign policy space to make sure that there is a linkage between that understanding? And on the issue of global governance, I think it's not our participation per se. And I'm one of the people who always say I'm not fascinated by how many trips we undertake to multilateral forums, but what is the impact of why we are there? And are we making sure that we are staying true to our constitutional principles and values in those forums rather than participation? So participation is another matter, but in terms of impact, it's another thing. And I think candidacy diplomacy is still coming, and that is what I always encourage, that we got to make sure that we influence those institutions through our candidacy diplomacy by providing our good professors to fill those positions in order to live through our values and principles. So on global governance, I am very much interested into what is our role in this multilateral institution to ensure that we live through our constitutional values and principles. That is the most fundamental thing, rather than being there and having our names on the table. So we got to make sure that when you unpack that, you drill down into that and to say, are we staying true to our values and principles when we are in the process of global governance and our role in multilateral institutions, the AU and the UN and all of this. But importantly and lastly, in terms of the youth, I think one thing that I would want you to do is to make an exercise when you engage the youth and just ask them about the question of national interest. Do they know South Africa's national interest, and what are those issues, and what do they believe they should be? So that you gather that information and you make sure that you have something. Because of you, one of your core mandates is the public debate and review of foreign policy. So when you do that, you got to don't get conflicted into your advisory role, because of your advisory role is a boardroom exercise. But more, your job is more on the public debate and ensuring that whole foreign policy space is open, and you got to make sure that you stay focused on that. Otherwise, you get to be co-opted, and I think the new word is captured. So stay true to your principles and the values that you, why you are established, is to open that foreign policy space that is close to the people. And a lot of people are asking questions. Why did we vote in this particular manner at the United Nations in America? Those are the things that you need to drill down. Why did we keep quiet when things were going wrong elsewhere? Those are the things, tough questions and tough discussions that you need to engage upon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalapa. Honorable Kaini.
Thank you, more
I think it's good thing to say that also in society, among the group, that what is good, what is good, what is good, what is good, and what is good, this artist program, what is so important, because to address it, we have to address the perception that the foreign policy is only for the elite, and also that outreach program to reach out to the cities of Africa, not only to the provinces, as we said. So the program must be carried beyond the province, up to the municipality. And when you talk about the youth, what the youth all over there, we need more youth as they are to Chinese art. But I think if you can just spread the outreach to the staff of government, that will assist also so that people can understand, so that different constituencies can understand, better understand the foreign policy choices of the country. Because really, we are concerned, because in ourselves, we don't really know, even as moderates, broadly. We are not in debt, we are not in debt, sorry, we are not in debt. And I think if you can also advise advisors also to the minister, is one of your chambers of justice, to advise the minister to expand the demographic. Also, I don't know, on the working groups, and I feel that we are criticized in numbers, but I understand we are criticized in numbers, but according to the of administration at first on the pilot. You are supposed to be 25 members, but now I'm not quite sure whether that you are really 25. Now, and the leader of the ATS told us he's also leading the global government. Now, if you can also just make us more clear about what is happening to the group, to the working group, because of working group, and it's working to understand that it's for its own purpose. So I said, now, I would like to know the specific portfolio, I mean, the specific area that are given to the department. If you also know what is leading what, maybe that's also can ask us to know my honorable member, or whatever I said, so that you want to know, or not, or he can just form, so that you know who is doing what. So that you understand when you are making those reports to the minister, then you are going to need that combination of what? Combination of the total numbers and what and what. So if you can also elaborate on that, if that the total number of you are really saying that this group has from three of you, just to know that, to unpack for us the situation, how it is at the subway. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Acting Chairperson. I just want to say that can we not go back to the program? We seem to be wandering all over the place, and I would like to suggest that we have the presentations, all the presentations, so that we can get an overview. Right now we are focusing on you know, comments that have come out, but it's not on the agenda. And as a result, I'm getting a little bit concerned about the time. Many of us have commitments, and we agreed that we would finish at 12:30, and I think we've only gotten through one presentation. So with due respect, Madam Acting Chairperson, can we go back to the program and get all the presentations, and then we could take, that's the practice of this committee.
However, but Mama Kenya wanted to make a second bite. Let's listen to Mama Kenya and then we'll go to the program. Is it okay? Okay.
Thanks, Chair, for the input from the members of the portfolio committee. I think much of the input that I made are sensitizing of young people around issues of international relations are also informed by the fact that the AU has declared 2017 as the year of harnessing the demographic dividend through investment in youth. So the question that we need to answer in South Africa is what is it that we're doing? And I think as SACCOA we've taken that challenge and are moving with some form of response at the end of the day when next year the African Union meet would say this is what we've done as a country. And hence I want to add that is the thinking that we become responsive as well. There's little to say because there were comments, but I can request members of the council to make input on what they've noted and what they want to respond on.
Yes, we are supposed to move to point number 3, eh? On Palestine and Israel.
Yes.
On
that
one
issue,
on this one, I have just to you don't have to answer it now. I just want to make an input. What was not said them in from their different political parties. For instance, if you go to Teflon or any other university, you must know that there is SANCO there, there is SAS, or there is EFF Student Command. So if you're one sided political as a department, it's not going to be right. Because my view. My view is that there is a well understood formulated position of what constitutes South Africa's national interest, which must be understood and appreciated across the party line, so that every South African knows that I'm a South African and this is what we are. But if we're speaking as parties, that's what their commissioner said and SACCOA. When we speak as parties, national interest is not the same thing. It's certainly not the same thing. And therefore, it means that it will depend on the party in charge of government about what constitutes national interest. And that national interest will also inform their relations to certain regions of the world. So there's no confusion about what is national interest. It was presented to ourselves here. And as far as we're concerned as parliament, we should know who can say what about South Africa's national interest. I've had to explain these things, but when they ask me as a member of the ANC, then I say, on this matter, this is the thinking of the ANC. Or this is the thinking of the cabinet.
Yeah.
Now, the youth are in areas like that. I don't know whether they've got SRCs. But it's not all politics and politics and politics. The youth, okay, I was saying in school youth, in the universities, and those that are outside. And the youth that are in the arts, as center. Because some of our foremost cultural activists, in fact, came from this sector. Your Miriam Makeba, your Hugh Masekela, your Lekrotman Yitere,
your Gwangwa and your rapier. They went about and then Ofela Kuti, you see. These are people who are promoting, in fact, the oneness of Africa when it comes to culture, languages, and other things, and other things, and others in business. So I think when we say young people, let's not go to look for those on the politics. See, see what draw it in, and it's not going to be an easy thing. And then South Africans, the public representatives are in the municipalities, and they are in the legislatures, and they are here. So it's councillors, it's MPLs, and MPs. And the IT department, we said this to the minister, IT department in the SACWA must appreciate Uti. People are traveling all over the world, but not much is known about what we are about. And some in the world, some countries, what they cannot get from the department, they go and get it to the, from the municipality. If the government, through their courses, or through EDTI, I said, no, but you can't do this, we want you to do this, and this, and this. Then they go and negotiate trade deals. Now, Umaspalata, bind the country through Umaspalata for 25 years, things like that. I've seen it when I was in MEC. So I think when we have this seminar, these two, the one that you're going to have 12 to 14 July, and the workshop, I wish some people, whatever they are, my name, you can bring Salga, or you yourself can request to bring Salga, and Salga constitute the leadership of it, so that they know that they are leading the municipalities within South Africa, within Africa, and within the world, and mitigate some of the weaknesses that I imagine. And then the last one was going to be on I will step off this one then go to the just to maybe review the initially taken decision that will make a presentation and then get input. The suggestion that we do on if I'm understanding the last that we make all the presentations and then we get input. Maybe you can advise on that. There was a sense that we are off the program, still on the program. So maybe it needs us to get advice whether we should do all the presentations. Because the next one is Professor Shamil again to speak on Palestine, Israel in detail. Maybe after that we can then get it.
Well, we will be here until 1 o'clock. For now, we're still in order. Let's get the presentation on Palestine and Israel.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll try to be brief and to the point. There may be some questions of detail that people may want to direct to me immediately afterwards. Looking at the region, it's rather depressing and bleak. This year, and in fact this month, has been 50 years of Israeli occupation. In 1967, in 6 days, Israel managed to triple its size when it occupied the West Bank, Gaza and the Golan Heights. Now, some supporters of the Israeli position will argue, well, it's no longer an occupation really. There is an administration in the West Bank. Actually, it is an occupation, and the occupation has simply deepened itself. They will also say, well, the Gaza is Israel withdrew from the Gaza, but it's essentially a large prison. In this morning's papers, Israel decided that it will only allow 3 hours of electricity to Gaza. So it's effectively an occupation with the Palestinian, and in that case, the Hamas administration, totally dependent on Israel for services. The same thing with the West Bank. The Golan Heights is still effectively occupied by the Israeli military. Yesterday, the press reported that Israel is starting its first entirely new settlement in 25 years. Now, it is against international law to settle land that is occupied in war. It's simply illegal. It's what Israel has done is simply illegal, and it has, when it established these settlements, it simply continued to grow them incrementally. Started new settlements. This one that it's doing now is simply a new settlement, not growing other settlements. And this is the main stumbling block, because a Palestinian state is impossible. It will look worse than what is called a Swiss cheese. A little cantonment here, a little cantonment there, with separate roads for Israelis and separate roads for Palestinians. It is just and barriers and security posts, etc., etc. The Oslo Accords was simply just not viable, because what it's done, it has had the Palestinian Authority become an operator of Israeli security. And there's no way in which they can do this without incurring the wrath of their people. And that's, for instance, we have seen the increasing popularity of Hamas that has placed the Palestinian, the PLO authority on the back foot repeatedly. Now, I'm not going to go into all the interfactional fighting and contestations amongst the Palestinians, because that's also not news that will impress or show any light at the end of the tunnel. But it seems that the so-called two-state solution is just not on the horizon, for quite practical reasons, because so much of the West Bank is occupied. How do you get people who have been there now for decades to move them? The current Israeli administration has been a right-wing administration. It has been bolstered by Trump, and it has been bolstered by the fact that it can have quiet alliances, and sometimes not so quiet, with various Arab states, such as Egypt, even Saudi Arabia. Once they have no formal relations, it's an open secret that Saudi Arabia has good ties with, in fact, the Netanyahu administration. So it's a rather bleak situation. There's no way out to see a solution that will bring back some integrity and some honor to the Palestinians. They seem to be on the back foot. The one bright spot is the impact of the boycott and divestment campaign, the BDS. That is a non-violent, passive campaign to boycott Israeli products, and Israeli teams and Israeli universities, etc., etc. In fact, the EU has made it illegal to sell products in the EU that have been produced, or that have any component in the occupied territories. Fruit grown in the occupied territories, anything. There was a big campaign against SodaStream, which had factories in the occupied territories. SodaStream has now stopped its factories in the occupied territories. Universities want to have nothing to do with them in South Africa, although individual contact with academics is allowed, because in fact there are many Israeli academics who support BDS. I know this personally from academics who've had to take a large toll for Israelis, but have found it acceptable. It's very much like the situation in South Africa in the 70s and 80s with the white left and the end conscription campaign, etc., etc. So that's where we're at. The just in the broader scheme of things, this is one of the conflicts that's been there for more than 50 years. But of course, the other conflict is the issue in Syria, the ganging up against Qatar, the issue in Yemen. It's part of, and in some ways, they all, Palestine figures in all of these things. Let me just give you an example. The Saudi position against Qatar is partly influenced by the fact that Qatar has been, which is also a monarchy. Saudi Arabia is an absolute monarchy. It's absolutely bizarre how the United States can be so indulgent of this country, which is an absolute monarchy, and the whole list of things that makes it a highly problematic state to be so close to for a country that pretends to support democracies or democratic programs and so on. Qatar has been a host to Hamas leaders, been closer to Iran, has been closer to allowing Muslim Brotherhood actors and so on and so forth. So there's this kind of scare in some of these monarchies that any groups not pro-monarchy will should be sidelined completely. And this just takes away focus on the core issue of Palestine, which has been festering for 50 years and more, which has been the longest running conflict there. So from my perspective in South Africa, the big push here for BDS has been very actively supported at university campuses, in civil society, in parts of the political sector, and that is the only hopeful thing that I see, which is a non-violent, passive, but effective route to put pressure on the Israelis at the moment. I think I'll leave it at that, and if there's any question, I can take questions.
Thank you very much, Professor. Members, questions and comments?
Chair, thanks. I didn't start in politics with the Middle East issue in mind, but throughout the ages, I think the more and more we mention it, the more it becomes a focus of attention, which is quite sad because it seems that we focus on one aspect of the Middle East. I mean, if you take what Israel is in the greater scheme of the Middle East, Israel's a pin drop, the head of a pin, and the rest of the Middle East is other territory, so to speak, which in itself has over time brought a lot of issue. Now, I take what the professor is saying, that of course that maybe the Israel issue is the longest standing issue. But I think when we talk on principle, any loss of life, any atrocity must be treated equally. I think we can't be fair weathered friends of death and destruction. Now, when I look at Israel, and I've gone into this and interrogated it myself as a, you know, I am Jewish, but that doesn't make me Zionist. It doesn't make me anti-Zionist. It doesn't make me Zionist. You're a Zionist if you believe Jews deserve a homeland, but you're not, you know, there's many things about it. So I went and studied it because, as I say, I didn't start off politics being in the Middle East, but people would draw me in because I'm Jewish. Now it's come to a point where I see there's three issues that really are the bane of this Middle East peace process, and it really only boils down to three issues: land, refugee refugees and Jerusalem. And I'm surprised that the professor has not used that as the basis for trying to build a conflict in Israel and how we solve it in Israel. Again, you watch footage of the withdrawal of Gaza, Israel from Gaza, and you just have to watch the BBC, you have to watch CNN, all pro-Palestinian media, and you see what it was for armies to have to take their mothers and children and whatever off the settlement land. And you watch that, and 6 months later, the whole basis of this Gaza withdrawal was that there'd be peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis in this part of Israel. Not even days afterwards, there are already rockets being fired into Israel. Now, I want to believe that it must be against the law to build settlements where it's land that's occupied by a war. But what I also need to understand is, does a country not have the right to protect themselves? And we ask ourselves in the South African situation, you know, we look at Occupy Luthuli, for example, and we see how our own soldiers from within a political party are called upon to protect Luthuli House. And in the same instance, how can we then condone that people protect themselves from, let's say, these rocket attacks? So I would be interested to find out from the professor how we would get to a situation where, when we speak about the Middle East, we rather look at how we're going to find resolution on land, on the refugee question, and on Jerusalem. How are we going to move forward? And I take that the two-state solution is possibly not the way to go. In fact, I think what we need to look at, based on what the professor is saying, is a three-state solution. No one wants Gaza being, as the professor says, you know, you're going to have a network of roads and you're going to have a network of dwellings that don't relate to each other. Gaza is very separate to the Palestinian Authority. In fact, from what I understand, and through my engagement with Egypt, through my engagement with people from the Middle East, it sounds like no one wants Gaza. So it's not that it's a policed state. It's that that's where the rockets, the tunnels and all that come from. So if they weren't policed, that's where war would come from. But it seems Egypt doesn't want Gaza, Israel doesn't want Gaza, Jordan and Lebanon don't want Gaza. So it's not that no one wants to, you know, to give them independence is exactly what caused the wall. The wall was to separate people being killed in Israel from people being killed or people throwing rockets and that from Gaza. Now, just on when we look at mediation, South Africa's always tried to say that they've balanced, but they will support Gaza, but they want to be mediators. I understand the connection to our brothers in Palestine. I have no problem with the connection. But you can't be mediators from one side. The most credible mediator is not even America. I don't find them a credible mediator. I find Egypt actually the credible mediator. And what we should be doing is focusing our efforts on trying to get Egypt to step in as the full mediators of the peace process, and actually America to go sit on the outside. And just finally, I look at the BDS, well, from what I'm reading from the BDS, if you live in South Africa, you think that the BDS is flourishing, you think that thank God for the BDS. When you speak to people in the European Union, they're banning the BDS in quite a lot of countries within, a lot of universities within, will no longer even have BDS on their campuses. And the SodaStream case study is a case study that I think is worth investigating as a portfolio, because if you look at the loss of jobs within that case study, you look at how many people lost their jobs because SodaStream moved from the factory where they were at to where they are now, and the destruction caused because of this unemployment and not being able to uptake jobs at the same salary. We need to find a way to take an unbiased look into a very emotional situation. I'm with the professor that we have to find peace. I'm with the professor that, you know, that we got to make sure that the atrocities on both sides are protested against, and that we have to take a balanced look as a committee in the situation. So, as I said, just for when we get to the workshop in July, I would just like us to focus on the three areas that are actually identified internationally as the key problems to peace, and that really is land, refugee status, and how we deal with refugees and Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mukhalafa.
Thank you very much, Chair. And you see, the problem I have always when we discuss this Middle East conflict is the issue of picking up sides and end up flip-flopping and not being consistent and being trying to ensure that we become credible in our message of building peace, in our message of making sure that we are mediators in the conflict. So how do you mediate when you are on the other side? I mean, it's a simple basic principle of negotiation. You can't negotiate mediate while you have picked a side. And I'm not saying it's wrong to pick a side. You can pick a side, but don't consider yourself as a mediator. You know, consider yourself as being on the other side. So I have always a problem when it comes to that. And I know that we will agree to disagree on this one. But the issue at hand is that, it has been said, you have given us an overview of the whole Middle East question when you look at all the other states involved around there. And drilling down into the effect on the Israel-Palestine conflict. Now, the South African official government stance is that of a two-state solution. You have made a pronouncement that you see that's untenable. What is the solution that you are putting on the table? We can talk about other programs, the BDS, and whether it's functional or not. I think it's like beauty, it lies on the eyes of the beholder. So if you see that it is functioning, well, good luck. Others are seeing it as just counterproductive. So it is those kind of ping-pong games that always happen when it comes to this. And my problem, again, is the issue of the war talk that always comes. So we end up not being credible and appearing to be credible. People who want to stop this or come up with solutions. So as I was saying, we end up flip-flopping and talking in tongues in different instances because of the professor is a member of SACWA, which is an entity of the department. The minister, when comes up, when she sits at the international forum, she will say, no, we South African government, we support a two-state solution. So we want an end to peace and we want dialogue and everything. Then when she went ahead, she said at an ANC conference, she said, we are pro-Palestine. You know, we support BDS and all those kind of things. While yet you've got a 500 million trade between Israel and South Africa. That is the flip-flopping that I'm talking about. That we're talking around in tongues while we're not drilling down to what is our role, what has been our experience, what can we do as South Africans who are miles and far apart from this conflict? We are miles far apart. I think our energies can be best served in the solving of the Sahrawi question. That one can be a question that can be resolved, and we've got influence over it, than this one where we are miles apart on it, and we don't even play a role. If when you listen to the professor, you know, giving you the Middle East issue, you've got Qatar, you've got Jordan, you've got all the Arab states around there. Those are the political dynamics of it. You don't look narrowly into the Israel and Palestine and think that you've solved the problem. There are other states that are involved there. There are other issues. And now it comes to that issue where the ambassador spoke about the external issues. That is where you also look at the external issues as well. So, what is South Africa's position? Two-state solution, an end to violence, an end to going to negotiations, an end of building of settlements, which, by the way, the United Nations has pronounced. So no one can come here and say, no, is it illegal or not illegal? That's not a question or a debate. The United Nations have made a pronouncement on it. So how do we move forward based on that? And that is where we are found wanting as South Africans, is that we are maybe perhaps failing this because of we are an external role player who's flip-flopping around which direction do we need to take. But if we pick a side and we also look at ourselves as you are pro or I'm anti, then we are not moving as much as possible. And we can make all these celebrations, 50 years, 100 years of we not solving the problem. What are we putting on the table? You know, you look at when you read the news today, You see the disintegration of the Fatah movement. The former leader is now busy against the current leader. You know, you look at the whole Gaza Strip situation, the cutting of electricity now, even limiting it to 3 hours. Those are serious things that you always consider. And sometimes I always wish that maybe if it was possible, you would take 50 million South Africans and say, let's take you to Israel-Palestine, go see for yourself and come back and make a pronouncement. I think people who go there and know what's happening are sometimes not honest when they come back and make an assessment of what they see. So we as South Africans, we got to make sure that we come up with plans and we stay true to what the government is saying. I mean, I would understand if the government was any other government. But if it's one government, we want a coherent message, we want one message, why don't we go with one message that is government-orientated and looking at what are the impediments and the dynamics that we are working under. So the pointing of fingers and everything doesn't... Politically, we can pick sides, it's fine. But from a government political point of view, it's one position. And we got to make sure that we harness that position. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalapa. Honorable Raputi?
Yeah. Now, talking about the issue of Israel and Palestine, I'm thinking very quickly, saying that probably if we can ensure we because those are the people who are suffering. And it's more of the egos here. Ego about power and all. But when we look in nutshell, who are suffering? Children and women. I don't know, Jack. Can't we really try that for mediators? Why can't we use women to assist in that regard? Because you can hear here, everyone is trying to defend their heads and all. And sometimes, you know, the media sell whatever, we know that media sell whatever that they want to sell, but we are here, ambassador is here, there are people sitting in different political parties. This thing has been there for long. And who has been in the negotiations? Who has been in the mediation? So to tell about our mom, let's be the one that can be able to assist the mediation. I don't know. So that is my no women, no cry.
Yeah.
No women, no cry.
Thank you very much. You remember the other day I was explaining that when an African says, I don't know, that means they don't know. It's just the way we speak English.
I just want to say, Professor, thank you very much. You people are doing a good job. I understand the position of our members. You cannot bite the hand that feeds you. The truth of the matter is, there's history into this. People want to work and they come back still having the kids, they're out of the day. Gradually, there is no Palestine. Gradually. Because there are all UN resolutions, but I ignore. Gradually. Now, this is Palestine. Tomorrow, the land is taken.
more settlements out there.
That's a fact.
I mean, these are facts.
Mm.
We can't
right.
say they are not there. These are facts. Just like if somebody is holding you and putting his foot on your chest, and you pick up a small stone there and throw him. What are you doing?
I mean, you are already there, you're down, and you're putting your foot on your chest and say, no, that one is attacking me with a stone. No, that is not. These are facts, people. And it's a pathetic situation. It's correct to say, these are mistakes. All we need to do is to talk to Israel. Please, withdraw. Full stop. Those people who are able to talk to him and say, please withdraw. I mean, strictly speaking, but before we talk, I mean, maybe in 10 or 20 years' time, there will be no Palestine. There will be no Gaza, there will be nothing. It will all be Israel. I mean, that's a fact, people. This is a fact on the ground. We may not like them, but it is a fact. The question is, do we come in? If so, how? Two ways. Request Israel, please don't do this. People in the world said to us, to the South African government, don't do it. Please don't do it. And there had to be sanctions. And a lot of people did contribute in various parts of the world. They sacrificed almost everything. Workers refused to take South African coup, and so on. That put some pressure. Today we're talking about a democratic South Africa. That's the fact. I mean, these are facts. We may like, we may not like it, but it's true. And this is why you find people who are also members of the Israel community say, people, this is not all right. Yeah, and people, let us be honest. Thank you very much, Professor. And I think that we will do the best we can together with very good Israeli people to understand and let's work towards peace. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpumlwana. No further takers. Just a few comments from myself. I think I agree with Honorable Rahman that we should not conflate, and quite often do, maybe so many times, conflate Middle East with Israel and Palestine, or Palestine and Israel. And the two countries are in fact impacted upon by the relations, good or bad, among other players within the Middle East. And I think we must find a day where we have a discussion among the people about the Middle East as a geographical area, which will bring in your Yemen, your Qatar, your Saudi Arabia, your Egypt, and then Israel and Palestine as part of the players there. But of course, we must have a focused discussion on Israel and Palestine. Perhaps what we don't say what we don't say is what partly Honorable Khalafa was touching upon as to who are the countries, I'm not sure if that's the title, who are the countries who are actually supporting the Palestinian cause, and what ideological and political disposition inform them to take that kind of position.
then beyond those countries is the institutions of multilateral government, like your United Nations. What is it comments about this? Because it's a world body of matters like this. And why would other countries not listen? The USA, Israel, and others, they are supporters. You see? And also say, the other countries are supporting Israel, including the following multilateral. So that perhaps a discussion like that, which focuses on the two, and how they themselves are impacted upon by things like that. And I want to pick one element. I'm not sure if I'm necessarily right, but I'm just in historical upon it. The Middle East now, not Palestine and Israel. The Middle East has been a contested terrain for at least over 100 years, to the extent that I remember. Members will remember how the Middle East was critical in winning or not winning the First World War and in the Second World War, at least around that area, and during the Cold War. So, when certain countries support Israel, they may not like what is happening internally, but it's an important country of influence for their own, from the point of view of the Cold War, for instance. If I pick on the USA, and I'm going to use another word, if the USA thinks that if the Middle East is in the hands that are ideologically against them and religiously against them, and therefore the Middle East will be under the control of another sphere of influence which over the years was the USA. If it has any ally there, Arabic or non-Arabic, it will support them for this specific reason, because it is good for the USA that any war must be fought outside the American territory. First World War, Second World War, all of them were never fought on the American soil. The American infrastructure was never destroyed in the First and the Second World War. So the theater of war must always be outside there. That's why they are part of NATO. But most of the command system of NATO, the six areas, look at where they are situated. So in other words, if you have a third world war, it's not going to go to the USA, except when you have some, what has happened in 2001 and when they bombed. But the rest will be outside, and it's good for the American interest. So they've got a very clear side when it comes to this, and they don't hide it again. You know, the Secretary General of the AUC once said to me, you see, I'm American. Don't hide where they stand on national interest. This phrase is liberty. If Inkomo from Rishayeli in his life doesn't want you to milk it, then Namanyamazwe, if an administration that will not give them oil, they will go down and they will not hide it. They are that kind of country. But so I think I was saying Ronald Bergman was right. Then the issue of the two-state solution, I think I understand that. But I know that people have been saying the Palestinian territory is shrinking. So if South Africa and others are saying yes to two-state solution, there might be no territory for the other states. The others are increasingly becoming stateless. Now, and South Africa might have to review its position on this and hear them out, hear Israel whether they actually are supportive to the two-state solution, and hear out Palestine whether they are supportive to the two-state solution. Recently, Israel passed a legislation in December
which was condemned by the United Nations, which legalized the retrospective settlement into Palestinian settlements or territories or land. In other words, if they settle 100 or 50 people there, then they kick in this legislation. And now it is legal. That's why the territory is sinking. Now, Arnold Bergman perhaps is helping us when he says three-state solution. But is it a view expressed by the Israelis? And what constitutes the three-state? Right? You will have Israel, you will have one could constitute Palestine. The third one, what will it be when you say three-state solution? And or Gaza. Now, there is also a security situation that in most of the time when we make presentations, we are thin on. Next time, perhaps we must have the members here. If, for instance, Israel has got serious security concerns, as it has, it thinks, and it could be thinking wrongly, it thinks that the statehood and the freedom of the Palestinians is actually a threat to them. Who does what about that thing that this threat in fact does not exist? That the statehood and freedom of the Palestinians is in fact in their long-term interest, in that they don't have to spend the money on soldiers, people getting into buses and all of those things. Because until and unless they see it that way, so, but as a nation and as a country, they are trapped in that security, perhaps lack of mentality. Perhaps if I was them, I would think like them until I'm educated otherwise. And again, it's not an issue about being a Jew. There are many Jewish people in other parts of the country who see it differently. Exactly as Professor was saying that, you know, in South Africa, just because you were white, you had to see the freedom of the blacks as a threat to you. But then there were many Jewish, Afrikaner, and English people who actually joined hands with the ANC. They were part of the adoption and the discussion of the Freedom Charter 1955. Many of them were members of the Johannesburg Congress of White Democrats. They were part of that. And in the 80s, as an Azazo activist, we actually worked with progressive white students who were going, after they passed matric or at university, had to be educated why they must refuse to be conscripted to fight against their own sisters and brothers in Angola and all those things. And it was not a new thing. In 1973, in the USA, young Americans refused to fight in the Vietnam War. They said, we are prepared to die for America, but what do we want in Vietnam? And our young people had to do the same thing. So to discuss that solution there is not to be anti-Jewish in other words. Mm-hmm. Just like the South African struggle was not anti-white. So the understanding of all of these things is actually very, very important. Now, but there are issues. I also thought I was going to ask you, Professor, about, you said Western and Swiss cheese, Swiss canton. Is this an expression?
Swiss
you can,
cheese.
Yeah.
Swiss cheese.
If you can explain to us. Now, just the last two things. When Honorable Mukhalafa said we must agree with Israel, yes, we must agree with Israel. And I'm not going to hide it. I come from Azazo at university. I come from the Black Consciousness at high school from 1977. I've been in the ANC. Now, we are not apologetic to anyone in the world about taking sides with the people of Palestine. Because before the ANC
before 1994, who have worked with the PLO. Good rapport between our leadership, Tambo and Yasser Arafat, and many others. They housed us when we were in trouble. Now, we will not leave them now that we are governing South Africa. And we will not leave Cuba now that we are in free people. And we will not leave Western Sahara. So these three countries, to the extent that we feel that they are being oppressed by someone, we'll stick to what we're sticking to. If there's a new government, they know that the things will change. And this much, I've explained 2 months ago in my lecture here at Newlands. Was Frederick Ebert Stachter. Actually, that I must clarify why what we want in Britain.
Mr. Chairperson, on a point of order, may I address you on a point of order, please? With all due respect, you are now articulating ANC thoughts, policy, discussion, and your personal view. Now, my understanding is that we should not be expressing party political ideology or views when we have presentations to be made. If we're going to persist in this manner, then I think you should allow me to talk about my lectures and what the DA policy is and a little bit about the DA history. So with due respect, Mr. Chair, we have an agenda. May I suggest that we stick to the agenda, we have the presentations in an objective manner, and that we interrogate in an objective manner. I'm sure your lecture was very interesting, but it is not the right time and place, and with all due respect, sir, this is not an ANC study group. This is a portfolio committee meeting. That's my view.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalia. Your point of order can only be partly on my lecture on Frederick Ebert Stachter and what they wanted to know about why what we want to increase and that stuff, whatever. I think we can leave that part. But the part that says we are a portfolio committee with members coming from different parties and that we must be objective, whatever is meant by that. When a party member, when a portfolio committee member speaks, it is clear what views, what ideological disposition inform their views, and if they speak here. So, we must agree to disagree, even in the portfolio committee, about what our take is on the matter that is being presented. So we must accommodate what you are saying, and from the point of view of your party, Bergman, Mukhalapa, perhaps the EFF, if they were here, the UTM, the COP, and the ANC. Now, ANC is in charge of government and is in charge of parliament. And therefore, when you talk about parliament to parliament relations and state to state, we will say, at least for now, until otherwise, we have a mandate of 62% of the South Africans and will champion national interest as we say it. Case will be closed up to the next election. They want to end on that. So let me just say the last part. I also wanted to clarify, Honorable Mukhalapa, that when you say we are miles apart from Palestine, from Israel, or from the Middle East, I don't think it's appropriate in that.
South Africa is a member of the UN and the AU and the SADC. And there are instances where South Africa as a country, informed by our own history of negotiations, when South Africa is requested by the world to intervene in certain areas. If Honorable Khalapa can remember also that when the BDS here says no, boycott Israel, boycott this and that, South Africa said no, we are not boycotting, we are also not withdrawing our ambassador, but others in the world have also requested us to assist. And the president appointed two special envoys to try to bring together the two sides, because they thought that we have got that particular history. But secondly, we must be seen to be playing a role in conflict situations, even in the continent. Even if we are far from it, what is clear is that because the governing party has got a history with a particular side here, it may be true that it may not be an honest process. Now, I don't know when the sent envoy is there. In fact, whether they cannot write about that. But for instance, you can mitigate that by bringing South Africans from different political parties and from different churches and say, hey, man, again, you're Lamula. So that Mutu Mageza as a Muslim, but I wanna imagine, I don't know Lamula if you say this. Or Masagat, no, speaking as a Christian, but no, Maja Penalabanya is a Christian. But if South Africa, really SA, were to be seen to be very successful in negotiations, diplomacy, if I should call that, it would stand the country in good stead. Because a country must come in a chair for itself in international relations. Otherwise, it will be abanyenje, abangasholuto. And my take of the South Africans, they want the world to feel that once they have joined the international family of nations.
Here is some information about South Africa.
I want to suggest that Sakwaya make a preparation, a comprehensive preparation to educate us on the Middle East, as you see it, geographically, its tensions, its trade there, who thinks what,
security.
Security, all of those, as a Middle East, as a Middle East question. I don't know the word question. But then we have a discussion so that we can situate Palestine and Israel within the Middle East context. I think it will be good for us. Khalapa, you want to help us?
Yes, Chair, I agree with your latter statement in terms of comprehensive, because of Professor has just given us some snap notes, you know, from a notebook, so it's not yet comprehensive. And I think we have engaged and asked questions comprehensively. And then we can have that workshop where we can say, let's go into the ring and the drafts are off, let's talk about this. But comprehensively, as you say, looking at all those factors. You know, and let me qualify the point when I'm saying miles apart. I'm not saying miles apart in terms of geography or I'm saying in terms of our influence there. We've got limited influence and we are more and more making ourselves to have limited influence. And the people might be looking for our negotiation skills and how to transcend and move beyond. But at this point in time, my view is that we are not doing that. But I agree with your final proposal that let us tear this thing apart.
And perhaps we must bring in a presentation on national interest so that we know where is their core standing on this matter.
Yeah.
And then at the party level, agree to disagree.
That's it. Let's go for that.
What, Putin? Let me have the food.
No, I'm Yeah, with Jefferson getting that kind of overview and all the difficulties, can we also come with some tangible solutions? If we know, suggest some tangible solutions that can be given to us. We cannot just talk and talk, but we don't have come with some what can really assist.
Yeah.
In ensuring some diminishing this conflict. Thank you.
The matter is exhaustively discussed, but you can make your last comment. Because how we have repackaged it was that you come there. From, do you want to have?
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you very much for these valuable points. Indeed, as the Honorable Bergman has said, land is the core issue. And it has been insistent occupation of other people's land that has been at the core of this. And you know, we know what it means, what settler colonialism means. This is the case of settler colonialism happening in our lifetimes in terms of the international community's laws against this kind of thing. It just goes on and nobody's saying anything that has any impact on the Israeli side. So I don't want to take up more time, but I think I would be very happy to engage with a longer session on the Middle East. The chair has put his foot on the ground, put his foot on his hand, on the mark, you know, that we can't see this outside the frame of international imperial politics. This is a region rich in energy resources, and strategically important. And so it's not simply little countries persistently at each other's necks. There's an empire that has to keep the energy flowing. And that's why the situation is as it is. Thank you.
The next item, you want to pass it again? Yes?
Chair, thanks very much. And I think on behalf of the council, maybe there are a few issues that I want to highlight as being raised. I think it becomes consistently important that we understand the input of Sequoia not as being a government position. Mm-hmm. And I'm raising this because we're an independent council, which would therefore mean that even some of the things we say we might not necessarily be exciting government, no parliamentarians, but we are really probing debate. And some of the inputs we make are of relevance as yesterday, because we keep ourselves busy in terms of understanding the world. And as a result, I think maybe in future, let's understand it as part of assisting us as well. I mean, some of the inputs that have been made, I personally believe that are going to probably change in our thinking in terms of what we read, what we get exposed to. But important is that we will not be a mouthpiece, and I think this must interest you, that we will never be a mouthpiece of any government, neither a minister. So I think it will assist us moving forward that we treat as each other in that particular fashion, meaning that if tomorrow we've got a different view from the portfolio committee, we will present it as such.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you very much. On Pan-African Parliament,
presenting. Chair, I think we would want to plead with the esteemed portfolio committee. We had requested Professor Figeni to address that matter, including a topic on the Trump leadership in the U.S. We would request that maybe since we have not been given the presentation, that we postpone this discussion on the basis that we will then get or circulate the input that has been made with that proviso. We'll circulate the presentation that was supposed to be made by Prof. And in our next engagement, we can then have a talk to Professor Somat by Professor Somat Odafike. So that is the request to Amit.
No, accepted. I just want to add that we have members here who are deployed in the African Parliament. I know that you present from the point of view of analysis, Professor Fige, sometimes I will not spare, but analyze our policies, how effective they are, et cetera. But we also have members here who are deployed there, and it would be worth their while to hear a presentation like this, and for them to then tell us what they see happening or not happening in the African Parliament operationally. Honorable Kalyan, for instance, is our member of parliament deployed to the Pan African Parliament. Honorable Kenya. Honorable Kenya, are you still there? Yes, Honorable Kenya is a member serving in the Pan African Parliament. Honorable Floyd Shibambu, but he's not serving here, is also a member of parliament serving in the Pan African Parliament. Things like that. I will see. We will see when you come and make a presentation. To what extent is the Pan African Parliament able to unite the African people across their parties, across their various regions, across their cultures, across their languages, across their everything, and therefore championing Pan-Africanism. Who would the Ibeki Pan-African Parliament? And number fears or otherwise that other jurisdictions or nation states, the fears they have about feeling that, you know, if you keep the Pan-African Parliament legislative power,
I think you touched on it. I think it would be interesting to hear Zako's take on the protocol to transform the Pan-African Parliament from a consultative forum to a legislative body, and whether model law designed by in the foreseeable future should legislative powers be given, how would it be implemented across the board, and then maybe the issue of the African passport to ensure free movement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalia. Yeah, so, Mutualo, Professor Nasige.
So we pass this one. So can we have your presentation on some key elements related to the Trump administration? The way it is, let me read it again. Some key elements related to the Trump administration and the repercussions for South Africa and Africa, such as climate change, the protectionist policy, the ban on Muslim travelers to the USA, and the increasing threat of terrorism. Now, there are few that I added on. It was after this, then it will be the elections in Netherlands and France. And pretend just close by those, and you can be very elementary because you are not interested to make detailed presentation. Over to you. Over to Sakwaya. That does not mean that we may not be able to interact with some of the issues that we have raised. And maybe on the issues on the election, members who have interacted with the process there could make contribution on the issues that have been raised. So I will allow members to raise their hand on this, on these issues. Understand is that the issue on the PAP and the US and the, all of the things that are there can be presented by Sakwaya in future by the two professors, Kumani,
yes.
Professor Somato Tafiri,
yes.
Subject to, of course, the space will be defined.
Yes.
Perhaps on that day, it will be space for these two plus. I would also suggest, Chair, that in an instance where members, esteemed members, have got maybe issues to flag so that we are able to review what they would have prepared. I like the idea that the honourable member is already saying what areas do they need to focus and zoom on, so that when they come back, they would have addressed those issues. So on the discussion point, if there are issues related to the topic, if they could be flagged, and then we can always interact with the members to then include that particular understanding of issues to inform the portfolio committee. No problem. Now, on the elections in Netherlands, France, Britain, is there any Sakwaya member who's able to say? It has not come in Sakwaya for analysis.
No. No.
By other.
No. No, I think we haven't. We're meeting next week. I think we're meeting next week. And then we'll have two full days to catch up with the last term or so. So we've been, because we all interested, I don't think we know anything better than you from reading the press. I myself read a dozen papers a day. And, you know, so we'll can say something in general, but I haven't been asked specific to say something, except what we're seeing is a very interesting pushback from the center and left-leaning parties against populism in Europe, at least in France and in Britain. It'll be interesting for us to look at what happened with Corbyn. What happened, in fact, is a massive surge of young voters that went for Corbyn, and an amazing strategy of using social media, which all our parties would be very interested in, which just hit the May government like a wind from nowhere. And the similar situation with Macron, it was social media. We had exceptionally, the report is, of course, that they also managed to block an attempt to hack the campaign, I don't know if you remember that, that was to play the cards in favor of the right-wing candidate, what's her name, Le Pen. So this is two fascinating phenomena, young people raising the importance of the youth. The sentiment in Britain seems to have been that, you know, Corbyn was simply bad news for the Labour Party. But this has been a massive resurgence. And you know, even Tony Blair was saying, was intimating people should vote for the Tories. He had no hope that that there would be such an effective victory, in fact, by Corbyn. So we haven't been asked to do specific readings, but it has been a salutary sort of pushback for the resurgent right in Europe. The other news about elections is, of course, what happened in Georgia yesterday, where you know the most expensive congressional election in U.S. history went the other way to the Republicans. But I mean, this is all just from the media, and we haven't had time to read this. Our next meeting is next weekend, and then we'll have a good time looking at all of these things. So I'm going to say that's all that I have to say at the moment.
Member? Khalapa?
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, definitely we will await that engagement, because we want to engage more on with SACWA on this current development and hear their views on that. I think one thing for homework also, just look at the issue of migration and refugees in Africa. The United Nations refugee has released a damning report about the refugees in Central African Republic and as well as Burundi. Tanzania. So have a look at that and the migration. Obviously, the migration issue as well is a big issue. There's lots of people who are dying in the Mediterranean trying to cross over to Europe. And I think it's of interest for the sectors, the non-state actors, to come up with some thoughts in as far as that is concerned. And then I think maybe also look at the issue of the Sahrawi question. In light of the current UN resolutions and the proposals that have been put forward, so that we also unpack that one. I'm very much interested in these regional sessions that are there. It's just unfortunate that myself and the chair will be at the SADC parliamentary forum during this period. But you know, one would have wanted to engage on the regional issues that we are faced with. But just the last question in terms of your core mandate, since you've been established, what has been the issues that you've been engaged and faced with or been affecting you in terms of your three core mandates that you are dealing with? And I think that will be able to assist us. Because the last time we engaged with you was in November. And ever since, there's been some things. I'm glad to see that you have in your first public engagement in as far as the program that you have shown us. But what has been happening between then and now? We met with some of the members when we were doing the Foreign Service Bill at the headquarters in Genoa. But what have you been busy with since we last met? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Khalapa.
Now, you were talking about the age of President Macron. I was at a regional conference where some young people were watching my presidential elections, given my age now. the world is growing young. Obama was 41 years. Macron is 39 years, and Kim Jong-un is, I think, 33 or 34 years.
the argument was that if you are in the 60s, I must just forget. No, thanks. We can then have more presentations in future on this matter. There were two items that came from one other world. So this presentation is put into this one, and it is packaged.
Yeah.
And thank you very much. There was an issue about, did you say next week's program, Honorable Kalia?
Yes.
Yes, Sara. I think, Chair, we were expecting to have a presentation from the Department of Public Works. We haven't had a response yet, Chair. And so it is up to the government whether we may need to continue or wait until Friday. Where is response?
I mean next Wednesday?
Yes, Chair. We don't have a response. It's up to the committee chair to make a determination whether we continue or not. And also taking into account that maybe the non-response would be that the... Okay, no structure, let me not go.
Well,
I thought Honorable Kalyan was referring to, or he said next week, because the one that is wanted by the chair of committee is the third quarter program by all committee chairperson. But that is something else. But regarding next week, the issues were two. It was public works on the foreign service bill, and then it was supposed to be what was the other item?
Yeah, as chairperson, I'd like to make a proposal. If the department has no concern, then may I propose that we do not have a portfolio committee next week. I know for a fact that I am only coming into Cape Town only if this committee is meeting.
Mm-hmm.
There is no other work because we finish effectively plenary tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to propose that if we don't get a confirmation by close of business today, that this committee agrees that we then suspend our committee work until the third term.
Agreed.
Do I have a second?
You've never made such a progressive ever since I went with you.
Yeah, we agree
that
to agree
this one today. We have the chance support.
I guess we agree to agree, Chair. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't agree.
Committee business will be suspended for next year. But of course, you know something else. Study talk. Committee Secretary, the last time we instructed you to liaise with the DG about and imagine outside Germany in other countries. How far has the department responded?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we were mandated, Chair, to communicate three countries, that is Canada, India, and China. And until an email, Chair, was sent yesterday evening, which I Canada is not available during that period. So Chair, we are left with two options now, India or China. However, it does not limit the committee to broaden the scope to explore the country, Chair.
Canada,
it is on research, Chair. During
Thank you.
and advisor.
Mr. President, I think I need to explain something to the committee. All these countries which we are getting no shows, it's not limited, I should say, the committee will be reminded that we have 4 to 5 stakeholders that we want to meet when we go to these countries on study tour. It's first the executive, and then the academy, the diplomatic academy, a body like this one, like FAPA, of the country that we are going to, and then parliament. So in all these countries, it's only the parliament which are not going to be available during the times that we are suggesting, because they will be on. Germany is the same thing. All the other stakeholders will be available, but parliament will be away. Canada is the same thing. And I suspect maybe with other countries, I don't know. But with China and India, which are left, India, their program, they come back in August. China, they also do, but China has other, so let me not pronounce on China, because they have other activities lined up for this year, their political conference, their national policy, I mean, the congressional party thing is sitting also. So there are a lot of activities. So other countries, there are other countries which the Czech can explore, which at the time that we are presenting will be available. But the problem, the challenge is only with parliament.
Mm-hmm.
It's counterpart committee. I thought I should make that one so that the committee understands. Availability, non-availability is only the committee, only the MPs. Because at this time that we are presenting, we will be on this way.
But therefore, it is slow in my view in coming back to the committee. Because initially, we can only submit another application to the chair of committee upon getting information from DERCO. That if you go to China, it will be this date, ground transport, accommodation, that, 11 members of the committee. Because the application must take a full package of the names, the money, and everything else. Otherwise, they reject it. Now, the department, okay, now you have told us where Canada stands. Now, what China and India? I'm saying slowly because we've got ambassadors there.
Mm.
If Swaziland City give us information, then they keep touch base with their counterparts and then somebody in parliament, they should be able to get information quickly and come back and say, no, here you can. Before Steve Lofo Manama country, we were assisting the information on China and India. And imagine, parliament is closing on Thursday. Not able to say. But if that information is back on, the follow application will find a way in which I should sign. By six up to 16 on the essential Friday. And I have to be stuck there because the speaker is not. So, but we can find other dynamics about signing. Aram Khalapa, you want to assist?
Yeah.
Ahmad, no, Khalapa, it's my ear.
Okay.
Sorry. Sorry, my ear. And I want to apologize to Khalapa.
No, thank you, Chair. I wanted us to follow on what the content advisor was saying.
Mm.
Because basically what she's saying is that there are important stakeholders that we should meet in those particular countries, but the challenge is one of the stakeholders will not be available. Now I wanted the committee to assess whether even if you can go to that particular country, meet the stakeholders, would it be
Thank you, Chair. I think in the same vein as Honorable Kenya has asked the question, I'm the content advisor to advisors. I'm just wanting to marry the two questions from Honorable Maidan. What will be the purpose of our visit? Will it be about to learn about foreign service bill, which you always going to get from technocrats, not from politicians? Or is it about parliament to parliament visit? So that we are able to know that if we go there, we don't see parliamentarians, it's not the end of the world, but we can see the technocrats who can assist us in the process. Or is it about diplomatic and protocol issues that we go there, we are members of parliament, we must meet those members? Where are we in that one? So that we can make an informed decision and say, which one?
Content advisor, what is your content on?
The issue, Chairperson, is with the identified stakeholders, we are going to be learning different aspects on the bill. And then the counterpart committee has a twofold mandate for the statutory. It has a mandate for our general oversight on foreign policy, and secondly, it has a mandate on their kind of oversight and challenges they need in terms of the implementation of the laws. So it's a sort of a kind of thing that will come before you, so that in the deal you are able to address some of these challenges. It's just that I was raising this issue so that if there is an alternative to when you go to when this issue is addressed in the honorable forum, to understand that we seem to be meeting this challenge where all the other stakeholders are available except the one, which is the counterpart committee, then I think something has to be, you know, the committee has to be afforded an opportunity to be able to do that, even if it's an emergency. If we can't succeed now at the moment with other countries, but it is important to have that also, in my opinion. Unless the committee decides to, I know that the committee has decided to go and not see a committee and came back home to do a video call. So it's another option, which is on the table. But I think engagement with a counterpart committee would be important, whether we do it on the trip or video conferencing afterwards.
Thank you. Honorable
Yeah,
I don't know how you are on the tip of your tongue.
Only planning the
stations. Maybe I'll join the CA and become
I think we really don't need the parliamentarians at this time. We are talking about law, which I think we need to see practitioners in that particular country. For example, if we're saying we're going to Canada, making an example of the president, we'll probably talk to the people about their acts, how it has been interpreted by their court, and that you don't need a politician who may not even be lawyers. I would suggest that we instead of going to Canada, if we decide not, and then if we request that to go there, the politicians will probably come with their policy. What we need, because we've got our own policies in the country, but what we need to find out is how their act of parliament has been interpreted by their court, up to the highest court, and what are their problems regarding that? How can we, in making the law, avoid that? I think that's the main reason why we have to go to this country. And they are unfortunately in the Northern Hemisphere, which is summer now. They will always, and if you want to go there, it's very cold in winter, which is about, that's from September. And if we're going this year, next year there will still be water reserve. So I suggest that we finalize, we go to Canada, except that I'm not sure if they are, I think they would probably be in Toronto rather than in Ottawa. They are the technocrats, at least they are technocrats who are likely to be in Toronto. But however, I think the department can assist in that. I suggest that you phone, the department will phone the ambassador there. This can happen within an hour, as the DG said last time. And then we probably can be informed within a short time, and the chairperson can even go today to see with some kind of detail. I think they let this committee decide. We are going to see the technocrats in Canada. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I'm just seconding Honorable Mpumulana's proposal, because that was the essence of the question. That, you know, is it life and death? So I can see that the purpose would be about technicality of the bill, and it can be done. And diplomacy can be conducted through various means. So even if video conference call is a better option after the talk. Because the thing is, we are on a race against time. If we don't do this within this period now, we're going to miss the deadline in terms of our target of passing the bill, maybe first term next year or second term. But we got to do this one first and get it over with. So let us not be tangled by semantics of who we are seeing there. If the technocrats are there, let's go for it. Let's do it. So I second Honorable Pumana's proposal.
Well, my understanding, subject to correction, is that when parliamentarians visit on a lawmaking process such as this one, you are visiting another parliament and you meet your counterparts there. But if in this specific instance, if we amend our and the chair
committees and the speaker allowed. I have personal problems, but in other old understanding that you are visiting another country, another parliament, and parliamentarians, because the context to that legislation that you want to hear something about will not be in favor. It's the members of parliament who speak to that, and whether that legislation serves the country well, and what are the challenges of that. Now, you must get warm bodies, political members, for explaining those things. But yeah, under the circumstances, can become officials. So even then, Lapan, please run with it and come back to us. Is there any other further business from Conscience Advisor?
Just for our understanding, gentlemen, did we go back to the countries which were initially together with the starting in Germany, Canada, blah blah, so that we get feedback from those embassies about availability without Parliament or what we do?
No. You proceed with Angiti, you have said Canada is not available. So you proceed with China in terms of parliament and India in terms of parliament. DELCO must then tell us where these countries stand in terms of this one. Because in the application, if we say we've gone back to Canada and we'll meet the officials, then we must explain to our colleagues that we were disappointed about matters, parliamentary processes in Canada. These are the reasons in China, these are the reasons in India, these are the reasons. Therefore, we're going back to the UK, to Germany, or to Canada. Now we'll meet officials. And we want to do it now with the summer that side, or whatever it is. And also for our own processes, that we want to be this committee that has overseen this legislation between now and 2019, the first ever by this department. Something like that. So, then I said that operationally, and then you will share.
Yes, I think let us agree what do we want to find from you. People, I think we differ completely. My personal view has been always that we're making a law. We need to see law, lawyers. Secondly, yes, we do need to find, if we're going to make a law, you don't go there and see an agriculture. We want them specifically to create our own law. We want to find out how that law operates. Their law. If they don't have it, what is their policy around that? This is why we picked on China. Now, if we go, I don't know, people talk about Germany. Germany is a completely different system of law than ours. If we go there, we're going for a talk. Because they cannot give us the interpretation of this particular act, if they have law, how is it being interpreted, and what flaws they can be. This is what, and we need to agree on what exactly do we want to achieve when we get there. So I think it's very, very important. So I think we should agree on that. Because if we don't, when you get there, we'll have to come back with this is what we wanted to achieve, and this is how we achieved. We went to a country where we could not achieve what we wanted. And please, can we have one meeting? Tadim Khalawa, you can meet your lady later, more private. So, Andade, I think, let us agree on that. The reason why I talked about Canada or Britain is because of if they have got that law, they must have gone through that law. We have got a constitution here, we've got the High Court here, they also have that. That changes that law. That's one. The second thing we wanted to find out the policies. They don't have that law. What flaws are there? What are the problems are there that can be interpreted? So we this is why we picked on China. And we even said when we talked about China, we have they have got a school of diplomats or something like that, where we can learn on two things there as part of our talk. And I think that this is one suggestion that was made by the chair on that particular country about that. So I would think that let us, is there anybody who is against that proposal before we talk about the country? So that if we agree on that, then the chair can be assisted when he's talking to that in fact these are the things that we want to achieve there. They are available in this particular country. And this is what we are likely to come back as a report that we went there and found this and that and that. So that we don't come back we run to our Atalapa. We try to when we're giving the report.
If there's anybody who is or feel that I'm wrong, please can they say their piece or whatever required.
Chem, not to leave at the point. I think there are two issues on this. There are two things on the clock here. The first one was that when I seconded on Lord Mulana, he said we don't need to see politicians. Okay, and that was the Canada proposal. And then that's when we agreed that we're going with the Canada proposal and that must be done. Then you came with a proposal that said, no, you need to consult the House Chair to see if that can be done. If not, then there must be a consultation with an option of China and India under the understanding that the politicians will be available. So either of those two, we don't know. What we know now that is practical and feasible is that Canada gave us a date and we had a fixed date, but the only thing was that we can't see the politicians. So that might be a feasible one if we're looking at time frame. The other one is the China one. If they are saying there's time, the politicians are available. So all of them goes back to the same thing. If we agree that we don't need to see politicians, then let's do the quickest and the feasible and the most easiest that can be done. That is already there. Which in this instance, as we speak now, might be Canada. Because of China, it means we still have to redo the whole process of the department going and asking whether the people are available or not. So I think that's my understanding of it. That if we want to do it feasibly and practically as soon as possible, without seeing politicians, it is the Canada route. If you want the other route of seeing politicians, it's China, which is another time on its own.
Yeah.
Now, why were you conspicuous by your silence on the lady that you have lost because of the interference of Khalafa, of Mbomlwana?
Me?
Yeah, you've lost the
No, lady. I was talking to the content advisor.
You're not telling us what has happened.
I was speaking to the content advisor. She was advising me.
I thought you were going to complain to the chair. No, I see you later. And we won't be able to finish all of these things until some processes have run their course. As in the department, the content advisor. And with that, there being no further business to transact.
Yeah.
Let us thank you. Members of the choir. Thank you very much.
How can we make it true in numbers that are incoming calls?
And thank you very much to
Mr.
Anushma
for their waiting.